In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Here's the issue. This is why we weren't on for the last half an hour. So there was a huge power outage at Bullard High School. And you know, the 1430 ESPN Studios is right across the street from Bullard High School. How do I know that? Well, because I get email alerts sent to me and text messages because my daughters, I have two daughters that go to Bullard High School. So the power's out, but they got to restore. So what happens sometimes? Well, actually every time. It's happened a few times since I started here a few years ago. When the power goes out, the boards reset and there's chaos and mass confusion. But Gabe Camarillo, who's manning the boards at 1430 ESPN, my man Jorge here, have been working diligently for the last 40 minutes or so. And we finally patched in. And actually, I kind of know how, but not really. Went through my phone, through Zoom. So anyway, patchwork here at 1430 ESPN. But happy to be on the broadcast today. Like I mentioned, here live at First String Sports. I am your host, Paul Metters. First String Sports is definitely the place to be. Very, very, very welcoming here. They are open nine to five every day. Come on down here. Actually, there's been a few changes, man. The store is looking a little bit different. A lot of things are consolidating to the front, and I love doing my show here. I'm here in the Letterman's Jacket Room. So thanks to First String Sports for hosting my show since day one. I want to mention Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating as well. And the weather has absolutely been beautiful for the last week. Right now it's 62 degrees, actually went up since the last time I checked half an hour ago. 62 degrees, a high of 74 degrees today. Absolutely, absolutely beautiful. Okay, so for the next hour and a half, we're going to be talking about high school sports and a little bit of Fresno State sports as well. We normally bring in Gabe Camarillo in the first half an hour, but you can definitely listen to Gabe on Home Field Advantage on 1430 ESPN, Monday through Thursday, 3 to 5. I mentioned talking about Fresno State sports, and I had Andrew Guzik on the show last year, and he's on the show right now. We have him on. I'll bring him on in a few minutes. Got a couple things to take care of. Andrew is a compliance coordinator at Fresno State. He used to be my go-to guy, man, talking about NIL and transfer portal and all the different goings on behind the scenes at Fresno State, the things that the normal fan, the normal listening audience doesn't know a whole heck of a lot about. But Andrew is here to clarify some things. And, you know, last year was, we had a lot of questions about it. So we'll discuss how the landscape has changed a year from now. At the top of hour number two, really excited about our two guests, Clovis North Softball. If you guys didn't know, they're having an absolutely phenomenal softball season. They're ranked number two in the state, number six in the nation. They are undefeated at 19-0-1. Man, if they can win a Central Section championship, they could go down as one of the best teams in Central Section history. We have standouts Ryan Maddox. She is the number one stud pitcher in the circle. She's an Arizona commit. And her battery mate, Kara Sipe, is coming on. She's a junior committed to Fresno State. And the interesting thing about Kiara is this is her first year ever playing catcher, and she's catching one of the top pitchers in the nation. So that is going to be a little bit after 11 o'clock. At the bottom of hour number two, Clovis East baseball coach Ryan Smith. He is defending D2 champ. The Timberwolves, of course. They took 2 out of 3 this week against Clovis West. He's a Buchanan grad, part of that really good 2005 team, the first Valley championship in Buchanan baseball history. Always love talking to Ryan Smith. So he is going to be coming on at the bottom of hour number two. All right, let's get into it. All right, we got Andrew here. All right, Andrew, we finally made it. Like I said, he's the compliance director at Fresno State. Last year, we had that great conversation about the landscape of college athletics and NIL and what that means, and just did a great job of explaining things. But first of all, Andrew, welcome to live radio. and you know, making things happen.
Yeah. No, when I came in here and saw you guys tinkering with everything, it made me think to myself that I think maybe going through all the technology issues and improvements we did during COVID maybe kind of helped you guys get live this morning. How many times did you have to go through Skypes and Zooms and Microsoft Teams or whatever? It kind of got you ready for moments like this.
Well, I was hoping that when COVID ended and the classroom Zoom stuff ended, that was going to be the last time I used Zoom. But no, we are locked into Zoom to patch into the 1430 network. So yeah. And that's one of the things about technology, right? Like, you know, I'm a teacher. And so you rely on technology so much. If you forget a password or a computer goes down, you know, what do? Got to go back to old fashioned paperwork. But Andrew, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate you. All right. So NIL. It's a hot topic still. It's a hot topic last year when we spoke. I read a ton of articles in the last year about it, which, you know, dominates the airwaves at times. You know, it's been described as the Wild Wild West a year ago. Have we moved away from that? I know Congress is now trying to step in. There's just lots of different layers to this. Is it in a better place? Is it worse? Or what's the landscape look right now?
Yeah, Wild Wild West is kind of what we talked about last time. But, you know, there's been a lot of changes in the past about 12 months. I was actually just looking at about a year since we've talked on the show about this. So two or three major changes, and I say major in the world of compliance, is what we look at. You know, a lot of the changes that I'll talk about, you know, don't necessarily get put on ESPN. They don't come through the airwaves as it normally does. So the first thing that happened, and it was developing around the time we first talked, was anybody who wants to engage in NIL activity with a Fresno State student athlete or a student athlete in general, they fall under the same rules that boosters do at Fresno State. So that's, you know, individuals associated or representative athletics interests. So kind of, you know, the term booster that we hear about. So that was the first thing. So that gave us a chance to actually apply rules, and it wasn't just applying ideas. So we have a body that we work around for that.
And you say we, that is Fresno yes. State. That's not, you know, university system.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. This is compliance, how we decide to apply our institutional policies along with state and federal law. The second biggest development happened around October when the NCAA gave us a directive that allows Fresno State to have a little bit more autonomy with linking up boosters, student athletes, and opportunities. Because essentially the interactions we go through on a day-to-day basis, it didn't make a whole lot of sense for me not to be able to be like, here's our roster, John Doner. If you want to get involved helping our student athletes, whatever way you see fit within the guidelines, of course, here's the roster. Here's those who have opted into wanting to receive name, image, and likeness opportunities. Go for it. We can even give them a space in order to do that. If we want to meet on campus, we're able to be a little bit more of a facilitator where we weren't before, which leads me into, you know, something new that, you know, if you were at the spring preview, you saw there was a booth at the top of the ramp there at Valley Children's Stadium for Bulldog Bread. And that is right. Bread as in B-R-E-A-D, as the younger kids want to call it, maybe stacking bread as in, you know, things like that. So it's run by actually a ESPN 1430 guy, Chris Pacheco. He has he's kind of been the brain trust behind it, wanting to get more opportunities to our Fresno State athletes. You know, this is not, it's not sports specific. This is athletics in general. You know, we want to be able to provide as many opportunities. And I say we as in Fresno State working with the collective, which is a group of donors. They're pooling their resources to be able to, you know, award student athletes for their, you know, their name, image, likeness, their opportunities to run themselves as a business. And we have a new hire at Fresno State. We have hired a dedicated name, image, and likeness strategy director. So we're working with him closely. He corresponds with the collective, and it's exciting. I actually looked over the preliminary paperwork for things this week, and they're really doing some great things. So if you're interested, Bulldog Bread.
Absolutely. Okay. So before Andrew, help me understand this. Could it be the case where a donor could just randomly go up to a student athlete and say, hey, you know, we love what you could do for our brand. We love what you could do for our business. we'll give you this, we'll give you that, right? Is mm-hmm. that what it looked like in the past? And now it's becoming a little more regulated where there's going to be a middleman?
Yeah, yeah, that's what it was in the past. And truly, it still is that way. You know, you don't have to, you know, offer your services, goods, you know, free meals or anything. It doesn't have to go through what's called the NIL collective, the Bulldog Bread. That can still be, and it doesn't even have to be a donor. It can be somebody randomly, you know, a business owner within town who maybe not necessarily has donated to Fresno State before, but they can go up to any student athlete. They can reach out on social media, be like, hey, I own this business. I'd love for you to do an Instagram shout out. Would love to have you come down, sign autographs, do an appearance, something like that. And it can be any manner of things that they work out, cash compensation, discounts, products, gear, swag, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
So when we hear about these big deals, right, when we hear about this kid made $1.3 million in college, what, right? All of us, you know, kind of old school people are like, oh my gosh, okay, it's come to this. What are some examples of where that money is coming from and what, you know, their services might do? I mean, that is a lot of money.
It is. And when you hear about, you know, and much of the time it's, you know, what makes it onto ESPN, you know, the main networks and everything. What'll happen generally is you'll see, you know, those headlines, 1.5 million, 1.3 million. These are the 1% of the 1%.
Sure. Yeah.
I feel like, you know, you might hear,
well, there's, you know, Arch Manning,
right?
I read
Arch
the article. Arch Manning's, yep, up there already. He hasn't even taken a snap. He's 17 years old.
Right, 17 years old. You know, he's so that presents its own challenges, having a 17-year-old do it. We had a student-athlete this past year who was trying to get into something, and he hadn't turned 18 yet. So I had to step in and be like, look, you're not, you know, legally, you are not allowed to enter into a contract with this. So you need to get your parents to, or we have to wait until you turn 18. So that worked it out. But, you know, when you see these, like I was mentioning, the 1% of the 1%, you know, there's a lot of things that go into these discussions. And I'm not here to say whether it's right or whether it's wrong or whether there's impropriety in obtaining that. But you have to think of it, you know, sometimes, you know, what it doesn't come out, maybe that's over the life of them as a student athlete. Is it, you know, is it Alston money? So when I say Alston money, so backing up, right before NIL was, for better or for worse, legalized within college sports, the court case that kicked that off was Alston versus NCAA, where they decided that schools were able to provide up to a certain amount of money in academic, for lack of a better term, academic bonuses, rewards for your academic success, which is why you'll see, you know, and bigger schools are able to do this. They can provide up to like $6,000 a year just because you took care of business in the classroom. So it's not tied to athletics, it's tied to your academics. So there could be some involvement with that. Could be, you know, a situation where that school has a collective and they're able to get, you know, a pool of money together to be able to help out a student athlete. And a lot of these metrics, you know, when you take somebody like Arch Manning, if you look at their Instagram, their Twitter, whatever it may be, I haven't personally, but, you know, especially when it carries the Manning name mm-hmm. along with it, I'm an Indianapolis Colts guy. So
that's right.
Definitely, you know, no stranger to it. If you're an NFL fan, you're not. You know, there's added benefits that come along with that where you might see. So like I said, the 1% of the 1%, but when you get to a school, you know, whether it's like Fresno State or a Mountain West school, you know, you're looking at, you know, deals where it might be in the $500 to $2,000 range. And, you know, that supplementing a student athlete scholarship is huge. Being able, you know, we have, you know, nobody in this community is a stranger to inflation. We live in a state where things are generally more expensive to begin with. So you get those sorts of things. And there's even, you know, a lot of businesses who are interested. I had a meeting this week with a local agency that, you know, just wants to be able to help the everyday student athlete, like not even necessarily a starter, second or third string on a football team, or, you know, somebody on the women's basketball team, water polo, something like that, you know, whether it's, you know, let's just get them a couple meals each week and then they do a video for us. So that's, you know, you have your big, your 1% to the 1%, and then you have the micro deals that are really helping, for lack of a better term, the common student athlete.
But I think that's awesome, because I think that shows what the heart of the Central Valley is, right? Helping everybody, right? You hear about the stars, the Arch Manning, the 1% or 1%. These guys, they're going to be well taken care of in life. Let's just put it that way, right? But I love that. I love to hear the stories about, hey, we want to help out this kid that might be coming from a rough situation, and they might not be a star. They might not be a well-known name to everybody out there, but we still want to help them. Those are cool stories.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we started a program at Fresno State with one team, and they work through Fanatics, you know, very popular athletic clothing apparel, and they are able to set up stores for our sports. So we've done it for men's and women's basketball, football, baseball, softball. As long as enough student athletes opt in to that deal, they're able to sell shirts with their name on the back of it.
Got it.
Fresno State football, Andrew Guzik on the back. Mom, dad, sister, brother, aunts, uncles, friends, family members, hometown, they can all purchase those. They have swag to wear, and the student athlete's able to get a percentage of that. So you have, you know, the backup, you know, long snapper,
for,
you know, just picking out somebody, you know, if they have a huge coalition that's following them from Hanford, Coarse Gold, whatever, they, you know, are able to benefit from that. And then, you know, they get to rep their student athlete the way they want to. And it's fun to be able to provide that and, you know, get them to be excited about it.
Talking with Andrew Guzik, the compliance coordinator at Fresno State. All right. So what is the end game for all this in regards to Congress? I don't want to get too, I know you have like 17 law degrees, Andrew, and very impressive, but you know, Congress is now stepping in. Right. And so they're like, hey, we got to regulate this stuff. So what's on the docket for that? You got big name from Saban, you know, saying, hey, you know, this is kind of crazy, even at a big time school like Alabama. So what's the landscape look like in regards to Congress and how they're trying to regulate this?
Congress specifically, you know, there's always been a talk when you go into antitrust law, you know, which basically the two main types, you have monopolization, and then you also have price fixing, restricting, you know, business practices and things like that. So when you talk about NIL in a space like this, you look at, you know, what can state, federal lawmakers, private law associations like the NCAA, who operate under their own, you know, bylaws, which, you know, they, you know, for the longest time were making the rules. This is what an amateur athlete is. You're always looking to what makes our product so unique, which for such a long time, sports is a unique product. It's not, you know, governed the same way as a mom and pop business is. It's not governed the same way the oil companies are. No, we have set rules that we operate under within sports. That lends us to, you know, what sort of exceptions or exemptions can we carve out to protect this while also controlling it? Because the more control you put in, you know, for something like NIL, where you're dealing with sums of money, more criticism will come up saying, well, you can't tell me how I can make my money. But within that, and where you'll see, you know, bigger, you know, state lawmakers, and actually something that, you know, is kind of in the same vein that's coming up through California right now. And we'd had a discussion about this a couple weeks ago, is, you know, revenue sharing within college sports, how the argument's being made that, you know, student athletes contribute to the product on the field and revenue generating sports, mainly basketball and football, you know, should they be receiving a piece of that pie? It was struck down last year based on the argument that you don't ever want to create an employer-employee relationship within college sports because there's a lot of labor law issues that go in with that, you know, being able to be fired at will, being able to, you know, having tax certain things, you know, payroll come, or like, you know, withholdings having to come out, which has never been a part of the student athlete scholarship, obviously. So there's movement on many fronts for things like this. There's always discussions happening, you know, whether it's coming out of the player empowerment side, student athlete empowerment side, and then, you know, trying to preserve what's going on the field. But there's no doubt, you know, when you look at these TV deals, conference realignment, there's significant amounts of money being thrown around with this. You know, we see USC and UCLA moving to the Pac-10. Everybody says, oh, demographically, that doesn't make sense. Well, you're looking at, you know, a tripling in revenue sharing with a new TV deal coming up. So, you know, you see that, you know, there's definitely movements on every front to do something about this. What that something ends up being is yet to be seen.
And I want to ask you too, Andrew, so what's all this mean, right? Like the product that us as fans, right? If you become a fan, and I know you're a huge football fan, obviously, but But, you know, the product that we see on the field, how is that affected, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, is it, well, this guy used to be at this school. Now he's, you know, what the hometown, the schools that you root for, like, does that landscape change? Like, fans will be fans no matter what, right? But do you think there is a little bit of a shift of like, well, I don't really know this guy, right? But I heard he's, you know, he's a transfer here and he's supposed to be good, right? Just that type of feeling from a fan's perspective. How do you think that's being affected by NIL?
You know, when the Wild Wild West argument was being brought up initially, and, you know, the sky is falling, college sports will never be the same. You know, we're coming up on 2 years now in July of, you know, NIL being a real thing, with the transfer portal being what it's become. And we're still kicking. Everything's the wheels are still turning. I think there's more parity than there's ever been, especially in the basketball side of things. You know, we see, you know, programs like Kansas State, you know, make it further in the tournament with transfers. You know, I think that's good for a conference like the Big 12, where, you know, generally you have domination from, you know, maybe three or four of the top teams. You have another one come up. Personally, as a fan, you know, I like it. I think it makes it a lot of fun, you know, seeing more demographics come through. You saw FAU, they, you know, were able to move through, you know, bigger, faster, stronger. Princeton made it to the Sweet 16. You know, it's not every day you see an Ivy League team make it that far. So, you know, ultimately, I think it's definitely a good thing that, you know, we're still kicking. College sports are still going great. Engagement's up. And, you know, we're seeing more and more areas of the country, you know, getting the spotlight that they deserve. Because, you know, these student athletes are putting a lot in. The coaching staffs are putting a lot in. All that stuff.
No, I agree. And talking to Andrew Guzik, compliance coordinator for Fresno State. Andrew, we got about five more minutes. Leading to the transfer portal, right? That's a huge deal. And I want to ask you, how does, you know, when a player decides to transfer, what's the chain of command, so to speak? Does, you know, you see on Instagram, you know, thank you to these coaches, I'm in the transfer portal. Does that signify when they're in the transfer portal? You know, it's a website, right? And the names are listed and coaches can go to it. What does that all look like?
So actually what happens is they come into the office. I turn on the transfer portal, all the plasma starts flying. They walk in and they end up at their new destination.
So you're the guy, I mean, you're making it all happen.
Kidding, obviously. So it's funny. I'll talk to student athletes when they come in. They have questions about the transfer portal, the process, and all that. And I think the media makes it seem like it's this magical thing, right? That, you know, all this information's listed there. It's this amazing thing. For lack of a better term, it's a list. It is something the student athlete decides, my name, I want it on there. I have to enter it within a certain time frame. That's one constriction the NCAA has put on it this year, is that there's windows you need to enter by. Usually it's after your season's over, corresponds with that, and they provide the information we need. You know, especially when we're dealing with a student athlete who's on scholarship, the coach is looped in on that because they need to either, you know, and it's advantageous for them to be able to speak with the student athlete just because the coaching circles around the country are so small.
Sure.
So when somebody pops up on the transfer portal, when their name comes around, oh, Andrew Guzik's on the transfer portal, I'm going to reach out to his coach and be like, you know, what kind of person is this? Sure. And everything. So we encourage, you know, them to talk. It's not.
Have there been cases where the kid, you know, comes to you guys first before talking to their coaches? Is it a huge surprise where the information is coming from to the coach?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Gosh. Yeah. There's sometimes, you know, somebody will come into the office and be like, hey, so-and-so, how's it going? Hey, I'm doing good. I'd like to enter the transfer portal. Oh, okay. That's surprising. You know, we get rumblings from coaches like, oh, you know, this student athlete may be moving on. This may be that. And student athletes will be like, oh, you know, I'm thinking about the future. Sometimes it's surprising. And, you know, we tell them, we're candid with them. Like, this is the process. This is what's going to happen. You know, we have 48 hours or two business days. Once you notify us that we can add you to this, then coaches are going to be able to reach out to you. We want to have that. We want to encourage them as much as possible to talk with their coaches, you know, for multiple reasons, most of which just, you know, keeping them in the loop. It affects recruiting.
Yeah. But you want to be in good standing as well.
Of course. Absolutely. You want to be in good standing. And, you know, most of the time it's not because, you know, there's some massive, you know, polarizing event causing them. You know, there's many reasons why student athletes transfer, you know, whether it's playing time, whether it's wanting to be close to home, whether it's, you know, just looking for a better fit, could be academics. So much more goes into it than just, oh, I'm, you know, just transferring because I can and everything.
Yeah. Andrew, we got about another minute here talking to Andrew Guzik. What has been, so I mentioned a little bit, you know, Valparaiso, Marquette, you have, you know, I exaggerated with 17 law degrees. You only have like 12. So anyway, we'll knock you down five. But what has been some of the coolest moments that you've had here at Fresno State? Some things that really, really, you know, bring you joy.
So actually one of the cooler ones I was thinking of was recently we had a transfer track and field student athlete come in from the Bakersfield area. And first time I met with them, it was a mid-year situation. So I had to do some education with them. The first time I met with them, very quiet, reserved, you know, coming to a Fresno State, you know, it was from a different situation. So it was, you know, okay. It was a good conversation, everything. But recently the same person has come by and asked me questions about other things. I've seen them open up, seen them, you know, become more engaged in general, smiling actually, which is really good. Like, I mean, the first time, you know, I talked with them, I was like, oh, this person, you know, didn't talk a whole lot. Yeah. You know, it's obviously a lot of information being provided to them, but developing that rapport with somebody now that they'll even come by and just say hi and everything. It's little things like that that keep you going, because there is a lot of mundane things, you know, a lot of, you know, everyday tasks that, you know, have to get done, but don't necessarily bring you joy in the purest form. But it's those everyday interactions that just keep me going.
Good stuff, Andrew. Always love talking with you. You run into each other at church and we're talking Fresno State stuff. So thanks for coming in on this day where we got a little bit of a late start and a little bit of awkward beginning, but thanks for rolling with the punches. Kind of like your job, right? You just got to go with it. Yeah. Yep. Your job is problem solving. So we're doing problem solving here, but Andrew, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul.
You bet. All right. Coming up after the break, we have a couple of Clovis North softball players, Ryan Maddox, Kara Sipe on 1430 ESPN.
March Madness on locally owned 1430 ESPN. In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report. I am your host, Paul Metters, here at First String Sports. Thank you for listening to hour number one. A little bit of a glitch. The power went out at the studios, and so we had to reset. So we were able to come on a little bit late, though, but thanks for rolling with the punches with us here at First String Sports on Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. I am your host, Paul Metters. You can follow me on Twitter at 1430 ESPN. Just had a really good conversation with the compliance coordinator at Fresno State, Andrew Guzik. Does an incredible job, you know, laying out what NIL looks like, what the transfer portal looks like, the benefits of NIL, what the landscape looks like, all that good stuff. If you missed any episode of the Central Valley Sports Report or Gabe Camarillo, Home Field Advantage, or the Jose Gonzalez Show or the Bulldog Hour, you could go to the 1430 ESPN website, go to podcast and listen to any show. All right, let's talk some more high school sports here. We have a couple of really, really good softball players. How good are they? Well, Clovis North softball team is 19-0-1 right now. They are ranked number 2 in the state, or number 3, according to whatever poll you're looking at. Number 6 in the nation. They had really two tough games this week. They defeated Clovis High in extra innings. We're going to get to, actually, no. They won in the bottom of the 7th, 3-2 on Tuesday, a game I was able to go to. And yesterday they defeated Central 3-0. Ryan Maddox, the pitcher. Right now, 16-0, 0.62 ERA. This is what I love. And I remember when you came on the show last year, Ryan, your stats were unbelievable. The strikeout to walk ratio is awesome. It's 192-13 this season. Think about that. 192 strikeouts and only 13 walks. Oh, yeah. And you're also hitting .439 with 20 runs, headed to Arizona. And catcher Kiara Sipe, her battery mate, hit 370 with 3 home runs, 20 RBIs. you're a junior committed to Fresno State, right?
Yep.
Awesome. Thank you, girls, for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You got your little shirts there. Well, they're not little. We only had extra larges. So just like we're going to have to roll with the punches with that. But thanks for coming on. All right. I want to start with – let's start with the game Tuesday against Clovis High. It's your rival. They're defending champs. Whenever North and Clovis get together to softball, you know it's going to be a battle. Ryan, you were on the mound, and you were grinding. It's 1-0. And Clovis got 2 runs in the top of the 7th. You guys were able to pull it out. And the 2 runs were unearned. It was on an error. When you went back to the dugout, right, what were you telling your teammates, right? There's a couple ways you could go with this, right? You could say, come on, guys, we got to get better. What do you do that for? That kind of stuff. Or you could go the opposite way. Hey, we got this. I got full confidence in my team. So what was the main conversation? What were you guys talking about in between that inning?
First, I know we have had a couple come from behind wins. We defeated Kingsburg in extra innings. So I knew that if we fought, we could come out on top. So I was just telling the girls, telling Vicky, look for a good pitch, just find a way to get on base and we'll bring you in. And then the girls behind me, they did their job and we ended up on top.
And you drew a walk that inning, right?
Yes.
You drew a walk. I think you...
It was like 3 balls, a strike, and then another ball.
Yeah, and then the next girl got on and then the sack fly ended it. All right, Kiara, what are you doing the same thing? Are you just like, hey, we got this. We got a lot of confidence. We've come back in the past. Let's do it again.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Honestly, if we just keep our heads in it and stuff, I think we always end up pulling out somehow. So honestly, we just have to stay together and keep moving up.
Well, you've done it 19 times. You won 19 games.
Yeah.
So yesterday's game against Central. So sometimes when you have a big win like this, I know Central's got a really good pitcher, a big win like you had against Clovis, might have a little bit of letdown, but you knew that Central's going to have a good team. Was it just business as usual going into the Central game? What was really working in that game for you?
I agree. Central, they're a good team this year. They have a good pitcher. They have some good hitters. Being able to change speeds, keep them off balance, jamming them, when to throw the low stuff, when to throw the changeup, kind of have to change your approach throughout the game, to get them out each time you face them in the lineup. So just trusting my stuff and trusting my teammates behind me is really big.
What pitch was working the best yesterday? What was your go-to pitch?
Probably my drop ball. I'm able to change speeds with it, throw it off speed. I could throw it hard. Just having the feeling when I need to throw it hard or soft, just kind of a feeling thing. So I can get them out.
Kiara, do you agree? What was working? What was working for you guys?
Definitely our drop ball in. I think we played good. We found some gaps and some hits and stuff. And then, Ryan did a good job pitching and stuff, trying to get them off balance.
Ryan always does a good job pitching. Coach Dale calls all the pitches, right?
Yeah.
Do you ever have suggestions for Coach Dale? Talking to Kiara, do you ever have suggestions, with her? Like, hey, maybe we should pitch this, pitch this hitter this way. Or you ever, you just got to go with her?
No, I kind of just let her call the pitches and then I just set up.
She's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. So I think she knows what she's doing. Kara, when you made the switch to catcher this year, so how did that go about? Did you approach Coach Dale about it? Did she approach you? What did that look like? Did it happen last summer? Did you really work on your game switching to catcher? What did that look like?
I just transitioned to catcher a couple months ago. Me and Dale had a talk about it because she came up to me and she was like, I had to step up into a position. And that's basically how I started catching, got serious about it, started working on it more and stuff. And then here I am.
So only 2 months ago? Just before the season?
Yeah.
What position were you playing before?
Center field.
Oh, gosh. All right. So that's a big adjustment going from center field to, the captain on the field as the catcher. Were there moments where like, what did I get myself into? What am I doing back here?
I mean, I'm just doing whatever I can to help the team out. If they need me there, then I'll just do it, get the work done.
And you're catching one of the best pitchers, not only in the state, but in the nation. So were there, you know, some adjustments to, you know, following her drop ball. And obviously she's got really good, you know, a good off speed pitch. And then, you know, their fastball, like, was it difficult trying to adjust to those pitches and being able to catch the ball sometimes from Ryan?
Oh yeah. Her spin's insane sometimes. Yes. It's hard to adjust to them, but I just try to set myself up the best I can and then put my glove to where the ball's going.
Oh, well, how do you know? I'm especially on that drop ball, man. She had some pretty wicked pitches on Tuesday. I was able to see. Ryan, what aspects of Kiara do you really, really appreciate about her? I mean, not only off on the field, but off the field as well.
She listens. Cause you know, we kind of joked last year, like, Kiara, you know, you might have to catch next year. And then like in February, it became a reality. And so we were kind of like just teaching her the little things, how to frame the ball, you know, throwing runners out already. So she listens well, and she's not afraid to tell me, you know, give me corrections or just tell me what's up if I'm like have an attitude or something. So I appreciate that part too.
All right. You said it. I didn't. Having attitude. So that is one of your definitely one of your biggest strengths, right? Just your competitiveness, what you bring to the circle. Every pitch, you know, you bear down. Every pitch has a purpose. Kiara, did that surprise you a little bit, like her level of competitiveness in the circle? Are there any things that are like, whoa, slow down a little bit here, sister?
Oh, no. Ryan's always focused. Her intensity is amazing, and I think that's how she gets the work done.
So, all right. So we did this last year. I remember this was awesome. So I got a softball here. Obviously, yeah. We're on radio, but we do have a couple live streams going on. It's not the greatest softball that we brought out here. It's pretty beat up here. It does say official, though. All right. So you're left-handed. Mm-hmm. Show and can just describe. Well, let's start with that. Do you think your drop ball, that one that drops off, is your most effective pitch right now?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it just depends on the day, but it has been lately.
Okay. All right. So show us or describe the grip that you have.
Most people grip their fastball like this too, but I don't know. I just grip it across the C and then I just, you know, turn it over. Yeah.
Okay. So that's the drop ball.
Yeah.
You turn over.
Drop ball, change up. This is a grip for a drop ball change up.
And you grip it the same. Okay. Yeah. So let's just say you want to throw just a blow up by you fastball. All right. How do you grip it?
We don't really throw fastballs, but like, oh, okay. Blow it by you pitch is kind of like a curve or screw. So just make a C on the C.
Okay. Kind of. Yeah. So Ryan is holding it almost like a circle changeup in baseball. Her thumb and her index finger aren't quite connected. So, okay. So there's that pitch. I want to ask you too, Ryan, about growing up pitching. So you talk about Coach Dale, one of the greatest of all time. You start taking lessons from her at what age?
I was like 7, I think, at TNL.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And were there some moments? So you're 7 years old. So what are you, second grade, right? And the ball probably looks like a watermelon, right? When you're holding that at that age. Were there some moments with her and, you know, taking lessons, you're like, become a little bit too frustrated where you cry or you're like, man, I can't do this? Where's those types of moments?
Definitely when I was younger, I was small, so it was hard for me to make it even all the way to the plate. So that was, I remember that was the most frustrating thing. And then I just, you know, they kept telling me I had to practice and then, you know, get stronger. And then I could finally make it to the plate. And then I was able to finally hit my spots. And then now I'm here, you know, have like 5 different pitches. So,
and you're going to the University of Arizona.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, got a scholarship. Were there some times too driving to your pitching lessons where you're dreading it? Or did you like, when do you maybe ask you, when did you first start really loving pitching, right? When it really clicked, like, hey, I can do this.
I feel like I was pretty young. When I was younger, like when I would get hit, it wouldn't really bother me. I knew I just had to work and to get better. And then, you know, when I joined the Dirt Dogs, it became a lot more serious. We were playing better teams. So I knew, and I was dominating against some of the best teams in the nation. So, you know, I just know I have to get better every year. And that's how we won the national championship this summer as well.
Okay. That's awesome. Going into your freshman year at Clovis North, Did you know you're going to play varsity? How many games did you get that freshman year? Did you?
We only had like 9 games.
That was COVID. Yeah. That was a COVID year. Okay. Were you the number one as a freshman?
Yeah.
You were. Did you, what was your confidence level like that? Obviously COVID derailed lots of things, but what was your confidence level like going in as a freshman competing against, you know, 17, 18 year olds?
I'd say it's definitely not as high as now, just because I knew some of the girls, they were a lot bigger than me. They were, you know, some of them were 4 years older than me. But I just knew, like, if I hit my spots and trust my pitches, you know, I could get them out too. It doesn't matter if I'm a freshman. But yeah.
And it all clicked really your sophomore year.
Yeah.
Right. You guys won the Central Section title, Division I title. Talking with Ryan Maddox and Kara Seip of Clovis North Softball. All right, Kara, I want to ask you too about growing up. Like, did you ever start off pitching? Or were you purely an outfielder? Right. You mentioned you played center fielder before you switched to catcher. What position did you play growing up?
No, I played middle infield, actually. I was a second baseman and shortstop. And then I went to the outfield like when I got a little older. But now I kind of just rotate in between and travel ball and stuff.
Well, you do everything now, man. Yeah. Now you're, you know, going to Fresno State. Now you can play middle infield, outfield, and now catcher. When did you first meet Ryan? Have you guys been playing for a long time? What's the backstory behind that?
She was actually friends with my sister. And then when we started playing high school ball, we became really close. And now she's my friend.
And now she's your friend. Yeah, because there's a year difference. Ryan, you're a senior. And Kara, you are a junior. And then, right, your family, Ryan, you got three sisters, right? Mm-hmm. Your dad is a girl dad like me. I got three daughters as well. So what ages are your sisters and what are their names?
Cody, the youngest, she's 12. Cameron is 15 and Riley is like 26, 27.
Okay. So you're the second daughter. And, Ryan, I want to ask you this. All right. We're going to play a little would you rather game. Would you rather throw a no hitter with 15 strikeouts and a win or hit a 2-run home run to win the game?
I think I'd just have to say 2-run home run because I know we're winning that game. You know, it could be 0-0. I guess we would win if we threw a no-hitter. But
yeah, well, no, you can throw a no-hitter and lose, yeah. But you throw a no-hitter, but you get to win. So either way, you're winning. What would be a bigger thrill?
I just feel like the home run would be, yeah, a bigger thrill. I don't know. I know we're winning in that situation.
Well, running around around third base and celebrating with their teammates in that way. That's probably pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because you've done, how many no-hitters have you thrown? Do you know?
No. I don't know.
A lot. Probably a lot.
I think just one this year.
Kara, I want to ask you, would you rather throw a girl out on the bases to end the game or hit a 2-run home run to win the game?
Definitely the 2-run home run.
And she's already done that this year.
Which game was that?
Against Kingsburg.
Oh, that was the 6-5 game.
Yeah.
You guys had to grind that one out, right?
Yeah.
In extra innings. So you hit a 2-run home run to win it?
Yeah.
To left field?
Yeah, it was like left center, I think.
Yeah. Okay. I think I saw that on Twitter. All right. So, I heard a little rumor about this Clovis North softball team, 19-0-1, got that one tiny blemish. Tell me about Tito, the plastic rally chicken. Is there such a thing?
Yeah, at our, we had a Christmas party. Was it like last year?
I think so. Yeah.
2 years ago. I don't know. We had a gift exchange thing and, Dale, that was Dale's gift. And Kaylee, she graduated. She ended up getting it. And he kind of became like our team animal kind of thing. So we bring him to every game. He's like, good luck. You know, if we don't have him, he's immediately brought to the game by someone brings him to the field. Yeah, it's just kind of a rally chicken, you know?
Yeah, rally chicken. So who's in charge of Tito? Does it rotate people? Like, all right, who's got Tito? You better pick up Tito and better bring him to the game.
Oh, Bryn Gentry this year is in charge of him. She brings him to every game. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Kiara, got anything to add about Tito?
Tito's our fun animal.
Where does he hang?
By the water jug at the end of the dugout.
Is he just laid down on a water jug, or is he like hanging from something?
He's just propped up. He's like sitting on the bench.
So was Tito? What do you think that Tito brought you to good luck against Clovis High?
Oh yeah, definitely. Sometimes people in the dugout, you know, will go over, give him a high five or something. but yeah, for sure.
All right. I also heard that you guys are real, real big country music fans. True story.
Yeah.
All right, Ryan. Start with you. Who's your favorite artist?
I don't know. Probably like Tim McGraw. We're actually going to see Cody Johnson today at Boots in the Park.
There you go.
I like him too. I like him a lot. Yeah.
Kiara, who's your?
Definitely Morgan Wallen.
All right. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see a concert tonight, Boots in the Park.
Yeah.
It's at Woodward Park, right? Mm-hmm. Are you guys wearing boots tonight?
Of course. Yeah.
You have to.
Of course.
You have to. All right. So you've been around. I want to go back to Coach Courtney Dale for a little bit. You've been around here for a long time. In what ways, Ryan, has she like elevated your pitching to the next level? The mental part, the physical part, a little bit of both?
Yeah. Well, she's been through it herself. You know, she played at UCLA. She's been through it all doing it. So, you know, every day, or not every day, but most of the days we pitch at practice, you know, she kind of helps me in the cage. She takes from what happened in the last game what I need to work on, and we kind of work on it in the bullpen. Recently just been working on my curveball so I can jam hitters. But, yeah, she just tells me to stay in it, you know, just trust myself.
So University of Arizona next year, what do you think is going to be, or what has Coach Dale taught you about the biggest difference for getting high school girls out to now getting, you know, the best of the best?
You really got to get it in when you're throwing in, and you need to keep the ball low because the hitters in college, you know, they hit it out of the park all the time. So just kind of hitting key locations.
Ryan, I want to ask you too, a little bit about last year. You guys were having an incredible season. You guys were rolling, and you got hurt, and you weren't able to pitch in the playoffs. I'm sure that burned you up, right? And how difficult was that situation? And right, how, you know, did it just inspire you to come out this season and have an even greater year?
Yeah, it just kind of felt like I kind of let my team down. Yeah, I knew this year I could come back stronger, you know, hit the weight room over in the off season, work on my pitches. And so, yeah, I came out this year, you know, ready to go.
Kiara, what have you seen in Ryan in difference between last year and the disappointment, not being able to defend your title? You know, how have you seen the difference in her and her being focused this year?
She definitely did come back stronger. She didn't give up after that injury, you know. She's helping our team a lot right now, and it's going good.
I agree. All right. So, girls, we got one more question here for you. Thanks for coming in, talking with Ryan Maddox, Kiara Seip of Clovis North Softball. What is the funnest part about your team? What do you enjoy about this team most of all? Kiara, I'll start with you.
We're definitely all really close, and we're just full of laughter on our team, and we're all jokesters and stuff, and I think we make practice really fun in games. Our energy is, we have good energy too. And we just find things to do that are, might be dumb, but we find them funny to ourselves. So that's what I can say about
and Tito the chicken. All right, Ryan, what about you? What do you just love about Clovis North softball?
I'd say the same. I feel like, you know, in tough moments and things like that, we find a way to like just make jokes through it. Kind of makes us relax. Like in big moments, you know, the extra inning games and stuff. But yeah.
Well, girls are having a phenomenal season. You're 19-0-1, ranked number 2 in the state, number 6 in the nation. A lot of fun. I really enjoyed your game against Clovis. Man, you guys, right, had to come back in that one. I'm sure you made your parents and everybody pretty nervous. Yeah. But congratulations on all the success so far, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You bet. That was a lot of fun. All right, coming up after the break, baseball talk with Ryan Smith, Clovis East head coach, coming up on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report here on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters, here at First String Sports. Definitely the place to be. I do my show from the Letterman's Jacket Room, looking at Letterman's Jackets from Bullard, Sierra Pacific, Kingsburg, Clovis West, San Joaquin Memorial, Sierra High School. Just had a great conversation with a couple excellent softball players. Well, how good are they? Well, Clovis North, they're 19-0-1. They're having a magical season so far. Just talked to Ryan Maddox, a star pitcher. I mean, stats are absolutely crazy. What strikeout to walk ratio, 192-13. Are you absolutely kidding me? That is incredible. And Kiara Sipe, the catcher. So that was a crazy story. Like, hey, they needed a catcher this year. 2 months ago, she's like, I'll do it. So she's a starting catcher at one of the top teams in the state. I want to welcome Ryan Smith to the program. Ryan's been on before, had that great run last year to the D2 title, took 2 of 3 this week from Clovis West, tried to close it out yesterday, didn't work out. We'll talk about that a little bit. But Ryan, thanks for coming on. You came in with your Starbucks. You told me a little bit about your morning with your family. I love that, sir. So I got my Starbucks too. I became addicted to a new drink, the chai tea latte. So I was spending
solid choice,
right? But the problem was the price point compared to the amount of, how long it lasted. So I'm drinking those things in like under a minute. And now I'm making my own at home. It cost me about 14 cents. So, you know, you're an econ guy, right? You taught econ for a while. So I made a good choice in going to this, doing my own homebrew, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I still teach econ and I give my students all kinds of grief. Yeah, they walk in with their Dutch Bros and everything else. And yeah, you want to know why your parents are stressed out? Let's do some math. And then when I show them on the 1,000 or, 1,500 bucks it takes for the whole year and then multiply it by how many siblings you have.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I get it now.
I know. I am right there with you. And I still fall victim to, going through the drive. And that's a connection though, too, with my daughters. Like, hey, you want to go get a drink? Yeah, let's do it. So anyway, right. But anyway, good choice there. The hazelnut,
hazelnut latte. Yeah, that's my lazy Saturday. If I can talk the girls into it, we live close enough to the new Starbucks out of East. We jump on the golf cart, we cruise down, get a Starbucks, and this morning we made ladybug houses. So that was my Saturday.
So your two daughters, 7 and 5.
Two daughters, 7 and 5, Riley and Paisley. Yep.
And yeah, ladybug houses are awesome. So just we talked a little bit. So it was really neat. One of the things I love about the show and love about the Central Valley is, bringing people together and bringing, you mentioned, you had met Ryan Maddox. You heard a lot about her, this incredible pitcher, but she.
Obviously, you hear about her success and she's an animal on the mound and all that. So her sister, I work with her sister, and her brother-in-law is Colton Worthington, who I coached at Buchanan, who now coaches with me. So I get daily, weekly updates, sometimes on how she's doing. So, and I never met her. So, I heard a lot about you. She gives you that weird look like, who are you? And
yeah.
Put that connection together. And, yeah.
Yeah. Talking with dad, Jesse too, as well. Yeah. So that's really cool. So what is it, you mentioned the building ladybugs, but in the coaching season, man, it's tough. You take any moment that you have with your family, with your kids and you get after it. Right. Is that kind of your mentality with during baseball season with your family?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely my mentality with how I want to operate. With a lot of my coaches, they have young families and young kids. We put so much time into it during the week. My philosophy is if you can grind during the week and get done what you need to get done, it's good for all of us to, have a break, especially on a, Friday night game, 6:30, getting home at 9:30, 10 o'clock. It's good for the players too. Go be a kid, go hang out with your friends, wake up late, don't worry, but go get yourself a Starbucks or, do what you want to do. Some of our guys have been coming to hit on Saturdays and put some extra work in, which I'm not going to stop. If you guys want to come get some work in, let's go. But it's kind of a voluntary basis, but a lot of our guys have been coming out this year. One of my new coaches, Joe Palomino, has been heading that up. So we've seen some good success with it. It's it's relatively relaxed, but yeah, I like the idea, especially at this point in the season, of giving our guys a chance to get a break and decompress and get ready for the next week, because the track season is an absolute bandsaw.
It is. And so I mentioned your games against Clovis West this week. You took 2 out of 3. You're 5-4 in league and 11-12 overall. So what was working? What was working in those first two games especially? And then, last night was it 8-3?
8-3,
you guys lost last night. But, what was working early in the week for you guys?
So Tuesday, I think we had 6 2-strike hits. Their guy on the mound, Santos, I think he had like a 0.7 ERA coming in. I mean, and he didn't throw bad. We were grinding at bats and found some holes with 2 strikes, had some timely hits, put up some crooked numbers early and kind of just off to the races for us, luckily. And then Rocco Gonzalez shoved on Tuesday. Went 82 pitches, complete game, 2-hit shutout, something like that. So you get a performance like that on the mound, you get some 2-strike hits. It's usually going to be a pretty good day for you. And then last night, you're trying to close out a series and sweep, which to sweep a track team is just so, so tough. Yeah, they had their guy Tyler on the mound, and we basically just switched roles from Tuesday. You know, Tyler threw unbelievable last night. They had a couple two strike hits early on. They had two strike home runs, first and second inning, 3-run shot, 2-run shot. So we're chasing five. You know, we're talking about our dugout. You know, it's a track team. Their guys are going to throw punches. You know, what can you do to punch back? Our guys kept grinding at bats, and we couldn't get enough. Couldn't get that big hit. Hit some balls hard with guys in scoring position, but just stuff didn't go our way last night. It's a typical high school baseball game.
Yeah.
If you win it, you're like, man, that's awesome. If you lose it, you're like, well, what can you do?
Yeah, exactly. Talk about the makeup of this year's team coming off of a D2 Central Section Championship. You know, what does this team have? The same type of mentality, the same type of group? You know, last year you didn't have superstars. You just had a lot of really good players and came together at the end. But talk about the makeup of this year's team.
Yeah, this year's team has been interesting. We have some, you know, we have 6 seniors as opposed to 13 from last year. So we're not as senior heavy, but our senior group, they're a really good group of kids. They grind, they work hard, but some of them didn't get a lot of experience last year. So we've done a lot of growing up midseason. You know, we've kind of taken our lumps early. We lost some games that we probably shouldn't have lost. We lost some big games. I mean, I go back to Stockdale, won 17-3 early on. It's like, whoa, what just happened? And then we come back the next week and beat Rigetti.
Yeah.
So if I could give a word to this year's team, I would probably say resilient. They just don't stop.
Well, looking at your schedule here, you lost the first 3 games of the year. All right. Stockdale, Frontier, Stockdale, and then Fresno. So probably you're like, oh man, what the heck's going on? Right. And then you have another 3-game losing streak and then another 3-game losing streak. So what is, as a coach and with your coaching staff, like, you know, you mentioned, hey, it's high school baseball. Right. But what do you preach to the team? Like, you go a couple different ways with it. Like, maybe you got a game where I shouldn't have lost that game. You come out, hey, meet me at home plate in an hour. We're going to do some things. Meet right. me at that foul pole. We're going to, you know what I mean? We're going to do something. Or do you say, hey guys, you know, flush it. Let's forget it. Like, what type of mentality you and your coaching staff takes with those situations?
Yeah. And that's the essence of coaching right there, right? You try to find the right buttons to press. So, I think with this year's group, it's really never been an energy or an effort thing. They try hard. It's early on, it was almost like your golf game sometimes. Your driver's working well, but your irons aren't. So we'd have a couple guys who were just couldn't miss at the plate. But then we'd have, you know, a couple other guys struggling. And then we kind of flip. Some guys would get hot. Some guys would get cold. So we just were having a hard time putting together 7 innings. We'd have 2 or 3 really good innings and then 2 or 3 really bad ones. And I think what we've looked at as coaches and we've evaluated is it's just experience. These guys just need to keep playing. So we're not going to hit the panic button. We preached patience. We just have told them, hey, the game of baseball requires certain things. So we really haven't made it about them or other teams or whatever else. It's the game of baseball requires you to throw strikes, make the routine plays, and get timely hits. So our guys have responded to that call. They've kind of rallied around that. And when we can do that, we're a pretty good ball club.
You mentioned the grind of the track. It's tough, and you're very familiar. You're Buchanan grad. We'll talk about that 2005 season in a little bit. But, you know, 15 games, 3 games a week, rarely do you have time to work on some specific things, right? Maybe. But just talk about the grind and you know, the one of the highest, if not the highest, public school baseball level in the entire state. That's my opinion. But, you know, talk about what it means to compete in the track.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think our league is top in the state. I mean, it rivals anybody. I would talk to Gabe on Thursday about it a little bit. You always know somebody else is getting better. So during our league season, it's difficult. You get two days of practice.
Yeah.
So do you grind them or do you kind of, you know, try to keep bodies fresh? You know, again, I mean, that's why you coach. You try to figure out that puzzle. So striking that balance sometimes can be difficult. But you really just what I've really enjoyed about this year's group is our seniors have been really honest in telling us kind of what they need, what they want. And then we as coaches kind of try to put that together. And so it's almost we're trying to make them just as much of the part of conversation as possible. So they've got some buy-in and they've got some feel. And so we can really keep our finger on the pulse of what's happening with this group.
Do you think that has changed over the years, Brian? I know you mentioned 2005 and, you know, you're playing for Buchanan. Has that evolved over the years, that type of coaching style of, well, hey, we want some input for you guys instead of it's my way or the highway? Like, both can work. We've seen both work, right? Is that just your style? Is just that's where you guys are at right now with your program, or do you see that everywhere else as well?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for anybody else, but for our program, I mean, with this group, I think I really trust these seniors. They're great kids. We've built really good relationships over the last 3 or 4 years with a lot of these guys. So I think for this group, yeah, they get a little more leeway than others, but I'm upfront and honest about that with our entire team. These guys have earned certain things with me.
Sure.
Or with us as a coaching staff, right? But I want them to feel just as respected as we respect them. With this year's group, I think we could get more out of it. In years past, I've had groups where they kind of need you to be a little bit more, hey, we're going to go, or meet me at the foul pole. It's time to go a 30-second pole and see what you got. So, just like any team, especially in our league, man, it's such a good league. I mean, I'm thinking back to the Buchanan game, just your question a second ago. I mean, we have runners at second, third, in the first game against them. And they're, I think it was O'Toole at third base, makes a diving play, keeps the ball in the infield. If that ball gets through, we possibly tie the game. So you're right there with the Buchanan. Yeah, we sweep north, but two of those games, we have to come back on them. I mean, it is such a grind. It is such a grind. It's so much fun to play in. It's frustrating at times, but it's so much fun to play in. And I mean, I remember it being the same way in 2005. The only difference was we played two games a week, not three. I can't imagine what it would have been like three games a week. that would have been tough.
Well, the arms, right? The arms are the biggest thing. So going back to the Buchanan, so your three scores against Buchanan, they were, 3-2, 5-3, and 6-3. You know, a ball falls here, it's a different ball game. You know, a ground ball doesn't get through the hole, or, that's just baseball in general. 16 teams in Division I this year. What are your feelings on divisions and how that works? I mean, for me, 16 teams, right? And we've seen it. A 2 can lose to a 15, right? And baseball is different to me than football and basketball, right? Basketball, it's 11 against 11 and 5 against 5 and, basketball and football. But baseball, if you got an ace, if you got a dude, right? And you're a 15 seed, you got a dude, right? And you could just squeak out a run. So what's your opinion on 16 teams in D1 or any of the divisions? Do you like it? What do you think?
So, yeah, we've talked about this a lot as coaches. I think you do a serious disservice, and obviously I'm looking at it through a baseball lens. I think you do baseball in the valley a disservice to put it at 8 or 12. Because like you said, I mean, there's 16 teams, and especially with the coast schools now. We went to Rio Grande last year, and they're a heck of a ball club, but I never played them before. Didn't know anything about them. I was looking at the field on Google Earth to try to figure out what it even looked like. So I think 16 teams for baseball is the minimum. Yeah. We have such good baseball in the valley from Bakersfield up to us and to the coast. It's to us, it's just like going through another track season.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to play somebody who's unreal. I think it makes it a lot of fun for fans. I think back to when I was at Central, we had Colt Niesman, we were at Madera. And that Madera team was really, really good. But you run into an arm.
Yeah.
Can you find a way to squeak out a win? And then our goal was just to, get Colt in one or two runs and let's hope for the best and see what he can do. So yeah, I think it makes for really interesting baseball to watch and coach, and it just adds to the valley. The valley baseball is just so good.
Well, I heard there's going to be a vote at the CIF level. I brought this up last week. The language is going to be changed. So for basketball and baseball, it's not changing from single elimination. So that just leaves the option open. There could be pool play for baseball. Could be pool play for basketball. I know they do that in SoCal. So it's just a possibility of throwing that out there. That would look like, I know double elimination for baseball could be a good thing, but you got to have arms definitely in the playoffs. I want to go back to Ryan, to your baseball playing days at Buchanan. 2005, you won the section's you won Buchanan's first central section championship in baseball, right? What are some of your favorite memories, some of your best takeaways from either that season or that championship game?
So that season is one of my best, probably my single best sports memory of all time. So I got to play with my brother. My brother was an unbelievable player. He's the best hitter I've ever seen live. Played shortstop. I played center field. He hit leadoff. I hit second all year. It was too much fun. We were down 2-0 to Central in the semifinal game, and Danny Mora was on the mound. And Central had a great team, and Danny was an absolute beast on the mound. We were down 2-0 in the fifth, and it was kind of like, hey, man, we better figure something out quick here.
What seed were you guys that year?
Oh gosh, I can't remember.
You weren't the top seed though, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think that year, I think Clovis West had won the track. I think they won our league. And so, yeah, we were, I don't know, probably three or four, something like that. So we're down 2-0, 1-2 count. Danny throws a breaker and Kyle hits it almost to the light tower. Guys are going bananas. We're all fired up. Cause at that point, if we get out, we got 9 outs left. Kyle might not get to the plate again. We have to get him to the plate again. And on the very next pitch, fastball away, I hit it out to right center, tie the game. So we go back to back to tie it in a semifinal game. We go on to win and beat Clovis West at like 8-0 or 8-2, something like that. I can't remember. Joe Kemp would probably remember.
He
was everything. Guy's got a steel trap. That probably is my most favorite memory. But just from that year, we have Justin Wilson on the mound. We have Ryan Martin on the mound. Brandon Prieto at third base. Him and Keegan Freeman just battled it out. Jimmy Bedell at first. Darren Vogt made an unbelievable play in right field that game, that Valley game, laying out at Clovis West. I mean, that was such a good play.
I was there.
Yeah.
I saw that.
That was such a good catch.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. He was such a good defender. He was such a scrappy little, oh man. Yeah. And that's, I think, I haven't thought about that in a long time. But looking back and thinking about that, I think that's why I still like to coach. I still like to be around it. I want to win ball games, but I want to foster an environment and culture where guys want to come back. They build relationships with each other. They like being around each other and they remember, they have some memories to take away, from their time at Clovis East.
Yeah. I think Ryan Smith, head coach at Clovis East baseball. I love doing the show. I've been involved with high school sports for a long time. I coached high school baseball right out of college, with Tim Thiessen, right?
Oh, yeah.
You talk about, he was the coach at Clovis West.
Yes, he
made that catch up. Those memories just stick with me, right? And you go to college, you get into that a little bit, but you go to college, it becomes different, right? It becomes more of a business, and now way more of a business. And I'm just talking about, the need to win games. When you're in high school, you play for your guys, right? You play for your school across your chest, and the memories that you make. You're going to class together. You're going to lunch together. You're doing dumb stuff after practice together, right? All those things are pretty darn special. So that's why I think high school time, it's something to be cherished, but your time at Buchanan was awesome. So you went on and you tried to play a little college football and stuff too, or what? What'd you do after that?
Went to UC Davis, was on a football scholarship to be a, I was going to be a quarterback or running back or just somewhere.
Hybrid.
Yeah. They didn't know what they're going to do to me. I went and I was going to try to do baseball as well. And when I got there, just, things didn't work out doing both. And I really felt like I missed something with baseball a little bit. So I decided to come back to Fresno City, went to Cuesta for a year. My brother was at Cal Poly. Was a week away from going there with him, but they had offered, I can't remember the kid's name. They had offered a kid and he accepted. So I ended up finishing at Chico State, got a scholarship to finish up there. And then I've always wanted to teach and coach. I don't want to be a guy that kicked around, not that I was good enough to be drafted, but I don't want to kick around and chase a career in baseball. I knew I wanted a career in baseball, but when the playing days were over, it was going to be teaching and coaching. So everything I've done has led me to this point. This is where I want to be. I wanted to be a varsity coach in the track, teaching econ or gov, which I'm doing. So yeah, it really can't get any better for me right now.
Teaching kids about the not only stuff on the baseball field, all that, but we're making smart decisions out there in the economic world, right? Looking at the Starbucks, making those smart decisions. So I went out. Who gave you your first shot in the coaching world? You start coaching right out of college?
Yeah,
to Buchanan.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I started at Buchanan. I was a freshman coach for a couple of years. Matter of fact, talking about the memories and the things, the memories you create and the relationships you build. I just went 2 weeks ago. Derek Arkelian, one of my first teams I ever coached, he just got married, invited me to his wedding, so I got to go. And those kids are 10, 13 years past that when I coached them. Basically, the whole team was there. And we're talking about things we did 10 or 13 years ago. And man, it was just so much fun. And it would just really put back into focus for me. Like, this is why I do what I do. Like, this is so much fun. These guys are still talking about things. One of the kids said, I'm still 15 minutes early because of you. I was 15 minutes early because of Tom. Like, you just keep some of those things going. It's cool to see it kind of build on itself.
No, absolutely. Do you throw BP?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You throw BP. Do you ever step in the cage? Can you launch a couple? Can you show the kids what's up? Or
I don't know if I can still launch a few. I know this. The other day I was feeling a little froggy, and hey, but this is how you hit a curveball. I jumped in on a machine and hit a laser to right center, dropped the bag. It's not that hard. I walked over the dugout, and Dallas Calcami, one of my longtime buddies and coaches, he went to Buchanan. He goes, hey, you better not ever do that again because you might swing and miss. I go, dude, you're absolutely right.
I know. Yeah, and that's why you walked off, right?
Exactly.
You hit a laser and just drop the bat. Yeah, that's how you do it.
Yeah, I hope none of my players are listening to this show.
Yeah, you can't swing and miss, man.
I can do that every time.
And that's same with basketball too, right? If you're doing a shooting drill, man, you can't miss four or five in a row, man. You will never live that down.
Yeah.
We've got a couple minutes here, Ryan. I want to ask about some of your favorite Major League Baseball players of all time. Like, who's your team? Who's your guy?
Oh, I'm a Dodger guy.
So am I. All right,
big time Dodger guy. My parents grew up in Torrance, so I really didn't have a choice. Yeah, so I grew up watching the Dodgers. Big Clayton Kershaw guy. I mean, he's an animal. He's a stud. He's been there forever. I'm glad they keep signing him. At least to 1 year contracts, you know, to try to keep him around as long as we can, retire him a Dodger. That'd be cool.
Just got his 200th win. That was neat.
Yeah. But I mean, I really like watching Paul LaDuca, Raul Mondesi.
All right.
Yeah. I kind of like some of those older dudes. I grew up trying to hit like Ken Griffey Jr. I think like most of us, cause his swing is just so, yeah. I even at one point was like trying to convince my dad, hey, I need to hit left-handed. No, you're not going to do that.
You're not going to hit like Griffey.
You can't do that. No, he's the only one that can do that.
Well, I just saw something on Twitter. The two sweetest left-hand swings. Well, you got to talk about Ted Williams too, but Will Clark and Ken Griffey Jr. for that generation. Just beautiful swings. Well, I'm a Mike Piazza guy. He's my number one of all time. You mentioned Mondesi and all those guys. So, yeah, Piazza's my favorite player of all time. Got about another minute here or so. Clovis East, what are you guys going to have to do so the rest of the way to compete? You know, you talk about the gauntlet that is a track. So what is the focus from now to the rest of the season?
Focus is going to be keep doing what we're doing. I mean, we're not playing bad baseball. We play in such a good league. You're going to win games. You're not going to win games. But keep putting your best foot forward. And if you get beat, you get beat, right? There's a difference between losing a game and getting beat, you know, in my opinion. So if we walk guys and there's some things we can clean up, that's one thing. But, you know, I'm like against Buchanan, we had the bases loaded. Our three-hitter, Brady Faramiscu, had an unbelievable year, and I think he's the best shortstop in the Valley defensively right now. You know, he lines out to center with two outs and the bases loaded. We're down two runs, and their center fielder takes a hit away. But what else can he do? So as long as we keep putting ourselves in positions like that to be successful, they're going to fall or not, but at least you know you put your best foot forward.
Absolutely. Just talking with Ryan Smith. Oh, you know what? Where you get the didn't have you describe the championship ring from last year?
Oh, yeah.
What's that thing look like?
So that was a fun process. You know, you never know if you're going to be able to do that. To win one as a player was really cool. Winning as a coach was even better, I think, in some ways. The guy walked in, he goes, hey, here's my case of rings. You know, what do you think? And I go, where's the biggest one you got? And he goes, what do you mean? I go, these aren't big enough. Let me get a different case. So he pulled out a different case. We kind of designed it to look almost like a baseball field. So, you know, four cornerstones. It's in the shape of a diamond with some diamonds or stones in the back, and then a navy CE right in the middle. So,
awesome.
Yeah, the biggest one we could get. I wanted to make sure it was uncomfortable to wear.
Well, that was a great moment. We were able to call that game on 1430 ESPN.
That was an unbelievable
game. That was fun. That was an unbelievable game. Is right. That was so much fun to call. Thanks, Ryan, for coming in. Really appreciate you. Thanks to First String Sports, Jorge Rodriguez, Gabe Camarillo, Andrew Guzik, Ryan Maddox, Kiera Seip, the undefeated Clovis North softball team. Of course, Ryan Smith, Clovis East. Thanks for coming in, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You bet. All right, that's the show. That's a wrap. We'll see you guys next week on 1430 ESPN.